Hey, boss man.
Hey, employee. did you check to
yes,
see?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
All right. Do we have...
No.
This is all of our pre-stuff to make sure that we don't lose stuff like we did last time.
All right.
Hi.
Hi.
We are 2 days before I go back to work.
Yay!
Yay! I have to show you what I've been reading.
How to not get fired on your first day of work?
I never got that book.
The Comedy Improvisation Manual.
The UCB.
All right.
So, you know, because I love the form, but, you know, I want to know more about it. And it's very interesting. I mean, so far, first of all, one of the things about this is it's kind of like reading a book on how to play guitar. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to play guitar just because I'm reading a book about how to play guitar. But it teaches you the things that, you know, it teaches you the things that you do and the structures that are formed, mm-hmm. and what to look for and that sort of thing. So, you know, in order for me to actually gain any real ability at improv, mm-hmm. I'd have to do practice and form a team and all that other stuff. But to learn about the subject, it's fascinating. You know, right now I'm just on the part which is really setting up a scene, which is, things aren't even funny yet. You're just, mm-hmm. you're doing the groundwork. This is when you're yes-ending and stuff like that. But it's fascinating stuff, and it just gets, there's a lot to it, and it's pretty clear that you need a lot of work and practice to be good at what you do. This is long-form improv, where you're trying to establish a rapport and, as they call it, find a game.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of short form, where you're given a game. Right, it's props, or, you know, do something. You are actually finding a game, and then heightening that game through what they call playing to the tip of your intelligence. But it's
cool.
So yeah, it's as you can see, it's a dense book.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot to it. I'm about 80 pages in, and more to go.
So we're drinking the Oso Rusty Red, something we did not love so much on the show last time we had it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of those beers when you don't have to sit and fill airtime with. It's much nicer. Actually, this bottle might be better than the other one. That's tasting pretty good today. There's some good caramel malts, a little bit of cherry flavor. You know, there's tasting pretty good the first couple sips.
I think it still has a little bit of that kind of aspartame-y.
We'll see if it gets there, maybe.
Flavor. Something is sticking on there that just feels off.
Now that you tell me that, you've suggested it. Damn you. It did taste a lot more artificial, that fourth sip. Now that Greg mentioned it. But, yes and.
Yes and.
Yes.
Continue. And.
I don't know. I'm about as good as David Cross is at it on Arrested Development.
So in that situation, what you
the method do, one acting clinic.
By yes anding doesn't necessarily mean you say yes and, but you are you're responding to a suggestion, and you're agreeing with the suggestion, mm-hmm. and then supporting it in some way. So if I were to say, okay, let me think of something. Again, not good at this. But if I were to say something like,
"Hello, doctor,"
we're going. You probably wouldn't start as what they want. One of the things they tell you to do is do in media res. You know, start in the middle of the scene. Don't start with something, you know, it has to be more.
So it'd be maybe a
So it'd be more like...
And that's why my elbow's sore. You know, start with that, right?
Something, yeah. Like, then,
because now there's a big mystery before the suggestion right. that someone has to
right,
flesh
yeah,
out,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
So, you know, it could start out like, and that's why my elbow's sore.
I wouldn't say that would be the best. No.
Okay, I'm no good at this.
No, neither am I. So that's why I'm having trouble describing right. why that wouldn't be good. So I'm thinking of something.
The too easy of a setup there.
It's a little. It's not enough to go on. Because
okay.
you want to establish.
Well,
some...
I think that. So okay, I, not being a student of improvisational comedy, is I thought that would be a good start because it could. Am I in a doctor's office? Am I not? You know,
yeah,
they
no,
didn't flesh the whole thing
I,
out.
I could,
right?
You know, so. It could definitely be something you work with. It's just mm-hmm. you know right. the examples they gave in the book are certainly perfected, you know, mm-hmm. really thought out right. examples. And they say you know you get to this at a certain point.
Right.
So if you started a scene like that, I'm sure people would be able to work with it. But
I see.
But I think a better one. You know what? I'll just pull an example from the book because that's probably the best way to do it. Okay. Let's see here.
Suggest something to me. Suggest something dirty.
Okay. Let me... Sorry.
End scene.
I'm going to tie the balloon around your wrist so you don't lose it, honey.
That's a great idea. And why don't I tie this cement block around your ankle so you don't lose it, honey? Sweetie pie.
That's... wow. That's not really agreeing with me.
I agreed about the balloon part.
Yeah, but you...
and then
you,
it got very
yeah,
malicious.
Yeah, then you turned into... what we're trying to do, you know, you're going for... You're doing what they say... beginning improvers do, which is they go for funny right away.
I see.
And what you're not trying to go for funny. What you're trying to do is you're trying to establish.
I see.
And let the funny thing happen, and then once the funny thing happens,
sense. That makes
you
sense.
Build off of that.
So it could be something as something, oh, thanks.
Yeah, it could be something as simple as a thanks, but I think what you want to do at that point is like they suggest, okay, so initiation is I'm going to tie the balloon around your wrist so you don't lose it, honey. And,
you know, I wasn't even thinking about, for some reason, I obviously that setup makes me a child, but I didn't hear that. I heard mm-hmm. that I imagined it as an adult wife needed a balloon tied around her ankle or around her wrist, right? Mm-hmm. Which could have been funny too, but I just didn't know how to, you know, turn it. You know, yes, and it.
And so you would say you would not necessarily be the child because you could be anybody in the mm-hmm. scene. Okay. You would say, blow out the candles and make a wish. So you've now established that you're at a birthday party.
Okay.
Yeah, so you've established that much. So you're saying you're agreeing with the person.
Okay.
There's a kid involved.
So you want to just establish more of the scene, not necessarily...
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I probably would have made a comment suggesting we were at the zoo or something like that.
Yes, right? Exactly. So, yes is agreeing and is add to.
Okay.
That's how they put it. And right. So that's, yeah, that's, you know, chapter one.
Okay. Now I'm an expert.
So, a bad example, for example.
Is exactly what I did.
Okay, here's a good example. Player one, the chicken's done. Player two, oh, good, honey, the Jensens will be here soon. Player one, can you finish out the vegetables? I'm going to go tidy up the living room. So player one mm-hmm. said the chicken's done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Player two, oh, good, honey, the Jensens will be here soon. Establishes that, okay, they're married or they're a couple.
Right.
They're probably in their home. They're waiting for somebody.
Right.
Player one, can you finish up the vegetables? I'm going to go tidy up the living room. Establishes that they're in the kitchen.
right?
Likely
preparing for a dinner party,
right? Yeah, so, sure. So those things are that's a good setup.
And there's nothing weird about it. Nothing, quirky,
right?
So you don't want to go quirky until later on.
Right. You let that happen, mm-hmm. and then you build off that. So a bad example of starting with the chicken's done is okay. Player one, the chicken's done. Player two, great, I love chicken. Player one, let's eat it right now. You haven't established where you are, who you are.
It's kind of funny though.
It's not in a good way. So that's an example of what the of what mm-hmm. the work is and why it's obviously hard to do. Why this is something that takes a lot of work and that's just basing a scene. That's not even getting to the comedy part. The comedy part comes later. So
cool.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. I like I like the form mm-hmm. a lot, and I would like to eventually do some work with it, but the more I learn, the better.
Is there any improv groups in town? Yeah,
there are. There are a few, and some have classes, and so I may start taking them. Who knows?
Then you could really be David Cross. You could be Tobias Funke.
I don't know whether they're long form, but they may not be UCB style, but. Mm-hmm. From what I've heard, the first couple of lessons are the same no matter what. Improv 101 mm-hmm. is the same everywhere.
Right.
And then as you get into the different styles, the UCB style is what they call if-then, or if this is true, if this funny thing is true, what else is true? And that's how they heighten the scene. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, my topics. I had a bad back problem on Friday, the day after we went out to eat.
Oh, okay.
I was reading this book and I got up and just, I pulled something or got a Charlie horse. I couldn't stand. I literally was trying to stand and it was too much pain. I had to drop to my knees. And I couldn't even stay upright. At that level, I had to lean mm-hmm. down and just lay down. And I was like in so much pain. I had to crawl to my medicine to reach up from the floor to get the medicine that I needed. And then while that was, on that day, I had to basically stay flat for at least 2 hours before I was able to walk again. It was really bad.
That's no fun.
No.
Yeah, I was just watching the season of Louie, and I was telling you a little bit upstairs, but there's a scene where he, hurt his back. He was able to walk and whatnot, but, he hurt his back. And there's a doctor in his apartment building. So he goes in to see the doctor, tries to get the doctor to suggest something for his back pain. The doctor's just being a real dick. He's like, we have back pain because we're, standing upright, and our back's been, evolved to be horizontal. He goes on, he's like, every second of life you have without back pain is a lucky second, and enjoy those. And didn't give him, any advice on his back pain. But, it was much more fleshed out, a lot more that's not improv, no. Right? But it's written conversationally.
Well, if you want to pull it back to the improv, it's a sketch.
Yeah.
And this book teaches you would teach you in the same way how to write sketches, because mm-hmm. what you're trying to find there is what's the game of that sketch.
Yeah.
And the game of that sketch is doctor won't actually give any advice.
Right.
Any real advice.
Right. Doctor doesn't think back pain something to be treated, right?
Right.
Yeah. So but has a long diatribe on why back pain isn't treated, that kind of thing. It was
That's getting too specific. Yeah, yeah. The question of what makes the scene funny, I guess, is
well, right, right.
Person won't actually give advice that they're supposed to give. It's like mm-hmm. if you look at they bring example of the dead parrot sketch from Monty Python. Mm-hmm. Person won't accept obvious truth in front of their face is essentially mm-hmm. the game of that scene. So. Yeah. I stopped watching Louie because I found it to be more depressing than anything else. I didn't find, I found it was like, people call it the, you know, such a great comedy. It's not really, it's not a comedy. It's a drama that has funny moments.
I mean, it's very macabre. It's, I don't know. I think it's, I would still call it a comedy, but it's, yeah, it's definitely not your run of the mill comedy. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I remember when I first watched The Office, right? And I felt bad for the other characters because Michael was such a dick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get used to it. I mean, you just learn Michael's Michael and he's just a buffoon, right? Louis's comedy takes that to the next degree where you feel that same uncomfortable again, you know, because, you know, some characters being mean to each other, but it's a mean, funny, you know, and there's just...
Yeah, I mean, and I can understand that, and I'm not saying that that's bad. It's just, it stopped appealing to me, I think.
There was one scene that it might have been improv. It was Louis, Sarah Silverman, and a bunch of other comedians, I don't know all their names, playing poker around the table, and the one guy brings out that he has a vibrator and a dong in his nightside table to help him masturbate. And they just started fleshing that one out. And the way it developed, it might have been a sketch, but the way it developed, it almost seemed like it was improv. And it got to be pretty funny. So,
I do remember those scenes. You know, I think that when Louis C.K. goes for straight comedy, he can be, it's really funny. But I don't find him to be the most engaging storyteller when it comes to his drama stuff. I guess that's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird mix of heavy real life and then the comedy, right? And fighting the comedy. Like, there was a scene where they're on the subway and they're going over the subway rules. And the younger daughter thinks she's the whole day's a dream. So she wants to see what happens. Right before the subway doors close, she jumps out back out onto the platform, right? And, you know, it's Louis freaking out, you know. It has to get back and whatnot. And it wasn't a funny part, but, you know, I'm not sure. That whole... There really wasn't any joke. Yeah, it's just the other part. It's the heavy real life part, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's on the train platform around those people yelling at his daughter about how bad that was. You know, you just don't do that. You know, this is the real world. Bad things happen, you know, and just yelling at her. And it just seemed very real. It almost seemed like you're on the train platform watching it, you know. So you got a different kind of feeling from there. But it I don't know.
Yeah, I mean...
It's drama, but...
Yeah, that's...
It's almost like watching a play.
I can accept that bit
was, yeah, almost like the feeling you kind of get when you're watching something happen on stage in front of you.
Yeah, and I can accept that's, you know, probably is probably very well done scene, which is not what I'm interested in watching.
Sure.
Right now. I mean, maybe I'll watch it eventually sometime. But
right.
Yeah, so I'm perfectly willing to say that it was probably a very good scene and everything, but just not my cup of tea at the moment. But speaking of cup of teas... Sort of metaphorically.
I can talk about literal cup of teas if you want. I got some new tea a couple weeks ago.
Let's go. All right.
Better segue?
Let's actually use the segue in a good way.
Literal cup of teas? Yeah. So I limit myself to one cup of coffee a day. So I get in, have my cup of coffee somewhere between 8:30 and 10:30 in there. It depends on how I'm feeling in the morning. And then, you know, later in the afternoon, I often want another warm drink or something like that, you know, and I've been drinking tea for a couple of years now, and I had run through all my supply, and I had this Chinese green tea that lasted forever. So, you know, last year or so, I've been working through that thing. And so I went over to Presto George Coffee a couple weeks ago and got two. It's not going to be a great story because I'm not sure I can remember the names of the teas. So there goes that story.
Get any cheese at the macaroni?
Mao Feng is the one. It's how do I describe it?
Use your words.
I don't have the vocabulary for tea that I have for beer, right? It's just kind of the, I know I like it. It's good. It's a green tea. It's an organic green tea. Not that that sold me or not, but yeah, it was recommended by one of the coffee tea people there. It has a neat, almost like, I'm not sure if it reminds me of pork because of the spicing that often goes on roast pork, like rosemary and sage and something like that, or if it has a bit of umami, you know, meatiness to it. I'm not sure, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of, it makes me think of pork when I drink it a little bit, like a roast pork. I think it's maybe the spicing, the herbs, but I'm not sure. And then the other one I got is, it's a green tea, but the leaves are brown. It's kind of like a roasted green tea or something like that. And I'm not going to be able to get that name at all. It starts with an H, like Hiramachu or something like that. That one's neat. It gives you a more, what words would I use here? I'm going to use another meat type term, but it gives more of a gamey flavor to it. You know, it's not smoky like the Lapsang Saochong that I've had before. It's kind of a caramelization type flavor, but not any of the ones you're typically used to. Not really what you get with meat. Not really what you get with, you know,
have to try this sometime.
With barley, you know, roasting barley and whatnot. Yeah, so got those two teas. It's nice being across the river from the Strip right there. You walk down the Presto George. They have probably 100 different teas. You know, and they had on the top shelf right near the ones I was buying all the green teas, they had catnip. Just regular catnip. It's like for cats and people. So you can make catnip tea.
Ooh. I smelled catnip. It doesn't really smell very good, but who knows? Maybe the extract is good. Catnip doesn't psychoactively affect you. It's not like it sets cats off because of the way they smell it. It's something to do with the aroma. So it's not like psychoactive or anything to humans, at least.
Right.
We went down, I said before, we went down to Thin Man Sandwiches. You took me down there. You finally got me that chicken liver sandwich. It was very good. Very good sandwiches.
Yeah, so the Thin Man Sandwich Shop is on Smallman and 21st in the Strip. They've been open for a little over a year, and I'll just call it a gourmet sandwich shop. And I think that the husband and wife, or the cooks there, they run the place. They used to work in commercial kitchens. I'm not sure the whole story, but you know, this is them going off on their own. And dare I say they're masters at mixing flavors and textures and things like that. I mean, Grego's only had one sandwich, but I mean, every sandwich has just a great texture to it. And these contradicting flavors that work, you know?
Yeah.
Like recently I had one that was, I think it was the roast cauliflower that had like a coarse ground mustard in it. And you just wouldn't think that would work, but it worked, you know, because of the other things that had some kind of, it was like a Gouda melted on or something like that. And they just all worked together.
Yeah. Like the mousse, the chicken liver mousse could have been overpowering, but they had a slab of bacon in there that was more for texture than anything else. Mm-hmm. A little bit of smoky flavor, but mostly for texture. But they also had a vinegared bitter frisée, which really also helped a little bit add a little bit of crunchiness to it, but also take the kind of gaminess away with that bitterness and made it still palatable to keep having all that liver mousse. Really, really well done.
Right. Yeah, I mean, whenever you're able to get back and try more things, because, I mean, there's some sandwiches that I love more than others, but none of them have been bad.
Yeah.
You know, and you had one of those infusions. They use, there's a Pittsburgh Seltzer company.
Yeah, that was okay.
Yeah, that one was not the best, but some of the other ones, they used to have a one with bergamot. That one wasn't as good either, but some of the other ones are, you know, really good stuff. They just make a little infusion. They use the Pittsburgh Seltzer Company, which was featured on one of those Rick Seebeck specials, like the 25 Things I Like About Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And these guys are seltzer machines, like from like 1870 or 1880 or something like that. So it's this old, has like big cogs and gears, you know, pressurizing CO2 into the seltzer and whatnot. And they come in those big,
like a steampunk machine.
Kind of. It looks kind of steampunk. And I'm not saying that makes better seltzer or anything. I mean, it's just seltzer. But, you know, these guys are using a local company, you know, and for the seltzer and whatnot, just kind of that, you know, locally sourced type thing.
And then it's all the rage.
Yeah. They're making all the Yeah, the infusions. Fusion price. Actually, I think the price went up. It was like two something.
It was $2.95 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it was that much. Last time I had one, I thought it was the high ones, low twos. So,
like, you know, gotta make their money, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, so let's bring this up. Malted with. This is a, apparently. Now you say you've mentioned this before.
I thought I've mentioned it before.
I hadn't heard it.
Okay.
I've been saying this. It's just it just was simple for me to say, but that's the wrong way to put it. I get why it's wrong, because
we had a listener, a longtime listener, I think. Peter? Is that Peter?
Could have been, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Peter. And I noticed he had canceled his PayPal subscription. And I just wanted to send him an email. Thank you, because he's been a subscriber for years. He's given us enough money.
Yeah.
I don't fault him for canceling his subscription at all. And he mentioned, you know, he's been pretty far behind. He's not able to listen right now. He said he'll keep using the Amazon link. Ding! So that works. And then he mentioned he was wondering if Greg had ever stopped saying multi-with and started saying something that makes sense or something like that, yeah. He said. I don't think he was being a jerk about it. So, yeah, I mean, I can't believe I've never said anything to you about it, because it used to bug me as well, and I can't believe I let it go and never said anything.
Yeah, I would have much rather you said something so I would stop it. And
I know. I'm so shocked
that I want to be correct about
that. I'm shocked if I never told you that. But apparently I never did, or at least not when you were sober enough to realize. Anyway, yeah, so we had a little bit of conversation on AM about, like, what the right term is, right? And you didn't like...
The grist bill. I did not
like that. You didn't like the grains used, and you asked for something more accurate.
Because the grains used, what's the grains used? Well, most of the time, the grains used is barley. You are using specific types of malt. Specific malted varieties.
Yes, but using shorthand to say the beer is malted with
is poor. I admit that's poor. So
you asked me what's better than saying the grains, and I feel that the right answer, I'm not saying it's the one you want to use because it's a word that not a lot of people know, but the right answer is the grist bill for this beer is, and that is all the dry material, or, you know, the dry material that goes into the mash, right? So
right. I think that's too technical. Our show is not just for homebrewers.
Sure.
So
I didn't say I thought you should use it.
But I agree with you that that's a more accurate term. It just the reason why I don't want to use that is, you know, I want to explain that.
I think you should stick with grains. I think the hang up you're having is such a small one.
Could I say the malts used are?
You could say the malts used are. Yeah, I think that's fine. You have to be careful when they use unmalted malt, unmalted wheat, right. Unmalted barley, that kind of thing. But it's still much better than saying the beer is malted with.
Yeah.
It's an improvement. There's still going to be a few occasions where it might be inaccurate, right? But it's an improvement. Right.
It's gonna be a little hard for me because it's muscle memory. It's gonna roll off my tongue very easily to say malted with, but I'll try do my best to adjust it and, you know, maybe find, you know, I'll work with the malts used are and maybe find something better. Maybe I'll use grist bill if I eventually come around to it. Who knows? We'll see.
Right.
But for right now, I'm trying to. Trying to make a difference.
I'm sorry I let you hang on that for so long. I thought I had mentioned it. I thought you had gone back to it. I wasn't going to, you know, nag you about it. So, and usually I'm busy opening beers and pouring beers to concern myself with.
Anyone who's listened to the show obviously notices that sometimes, you know, I spout off these things. Well, it's essentially a little bit of a... of a time sink, in a sense. Jeff is busy pouring the beers. He's doing that. we need to have something to say. Right. So I use what I have about the beers, the information, and it's just, you know, it's a way to get past that time.
Right.
And so you may have noticed sometimes Jeff doesn't hear what I say.
Right.
Like if I say that there's an ingredient, like this has coriander in it, and he won't catch that the first time.
Yeah. I try to listen, but can't do two things at once, apparently. All right. Let's wrap this up and drink some beers.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're sitting out. They're probably about the right temp, so.
Yeah, yeah. I got more to talk about, but yeah.
Save that for later. We're doing double IPAs. The conversation's going to be a lot more interesting afterwards.
This is true.
Oh, and then our break's going to be a double Weizenbach something or another.